One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Friends, and thank you so much again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. I, of course, am Cam Hale. As always, sitting across from me is the wild child today, mi amigo, Mr. Filio Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm super glad to be here. Happy Memorial Day to those fellow Americans. I'm excited. It's fun to be here. I'm glad we're going to be doing something different. I thought we did it recently, but Cam just pointed out to me that we haven't done it in quite a long time. We're going to be talking about some listener stories today. So I always like these. Sometimes they're short and sweet, but it is interesting that you're not just reading these in articles or blogs somewhere, that you actually physically have people that I know that must be listening to us that are calling in and leaving their stories, or they're emailing us these stories. And, you know, of course, people are going to listen to these, and just like always, there's, oh, I don't believe that story. And other people are going to be like, oh, I totally believe that story. My brother's cousin's friend had the same thing happen to him. Whatever you think. To me, these people feel that they had these experiences, and I enjoy hearing about their experiences, although I don't want any of these experiences happening to me.
No, I'm good.
I prefer to live a normal life, just like I hang out with the kids, we play a little baseball, play a little dominoes, play some cards, do some fishing, like you said, and that's it. I don't really want any supernatural things. Yes, very mundane.
I'm a fan of the mundane. Hey, you know what wasn't mundane for me this weekend?
What's that?
I got to conduct a marriage.
I know. I wished I could have been there.
Like a boss.
We had other things to do. We had a Memorial Day, actually, picnic or party or whatever you want to call it, and a friend of mine's birthday party at the exact same time at the lake. So we weren't able to go, but that is pretty cool. I saw photos of you on Instagram.
Looking pretty nice. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I look all sharp.
So is that the first time you've ever performed a marriage?
That one and one more will be two for me.
Yeah?
That's right, yeah.
That is
the first time. Of course, now it's not the last. I've already been asked by a few others since they saw the photographs. They were like, I didn't know you could do that. I'm like, yeah. Well, you know, we always laugh because Kyle and I got ordained right out of school, basically, just so we could do marriages as a goof. And then it's just, we've never done it.
Yeah, the Universal Life Church. I am actually an archbishop.
So we did it, and then bingo, which now I've been getting inundated with it. So, yeah, I'm assuming I'm fixing to get real
busy. So what rank are you? Because my buddy Joel, he's the metropolitan.
I don't know. I don't think I'm anything special. I don't, of course, I'm not.
Just pastor.
Everybody knows I'm not special. Yeah, everybody knows that.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Special needs, perhaps.
Exactly. I'm not the one that just closed their finger in the microphone arm and got caught in it like a mousetrap.
Well, to be honest, I didn't know it pinched right there, but I found out. Yeah.
He just closed his finger, folks. And I mean good. Like you slam it in the car door good. Like it locked on and there was a lot of profanity. But anyhow, here we go. We're going to have a little fun. We're going to jump into some news before we get into these listener stories. Kyle, I got something for you, bud.
Please.
Gainstown, Alabama.
Okay.
An Alabama family is threatening to kill local Bigfoot.
Oh, so they don't want to preserve this creature for science. They want to kill it.
Well, it didn't start out that way. All right, this is, of course, from our friends at Cryptozoology News. A man in Clark County says he and his family are tired of dealing with Bigfoot creature and are threatening to kill it unless officials come to, in quotes, capture and remove it.
Is it what kind of problems is it causing?
Here you go. Yeah. Now, the eyewitness claims that he was sleeping after a family reunion in Gainestown, Alabama, when he first encountered the bipedal creature in 2015. And here he says, it was 3:30 a.m. and I had fallen asleep on my cousin's sofa. All of a sudden, the dog started going crazy and I heard one of them yelling out like it was hurt. Then I heard the sounds of something coming up on the porch and I set up to look out the front window. What I saw was unforgettable and unbelievable. Now, the man is a native Texan. Okay, now he alleges that a hairy animal walking on two legs was going through the trash can located on the front porch.
Right.
Says it was squatting down right in front of me. I guess it was too big to stand straight up on the porch. I don't know why it was there, but we had left the empty beer and soda cans and leftover food scraps in a couple of trash bags to be thrown out the next day. The lights were on so I could clearly see it. And this is what he described, an 8-foot tall creature with brown and red hair. Its back, he added, was very muscular with 16-inch feet and 5-foot-long arms. This is what he said. It was maybe about 800 pounds, and it smelled of cheese gone bad. It never turned, so I could not see its face. And he went on to say he was too scared to move, but that he observed the animal for about 20 minutes. And it says that he was not able to snap a picture of the unproven animal.
Right.
He says, my cell phone was on a charger across the room. And this is, he was talking to a fellow named Mike Brumfield, and he's a BFRO investigator. He said, I didn't want to move and scare it away. But he did add that the creature was going through the trash and it took a leap to the ground and it crossed a 30-foot road in two strides and it went down in a ravine and vanished. But he says, according to the family, this creature's been showing up often and hurting their pets that they keep outside. He says, now we know where it lives and how it travels, and all we want is for someone to capture and remove it, or we will find it and we will kill it.
Well, before you talked about it hurting animals or the pets of some neighbors and stuff, I was like, Well, I don't understand. What, it didn't look like it did anything. It was just on your porch looking.
It's going through
your
trash.
Yeah, who cares?
That's it. Now, Brumfield, the investigator, he said he researched the area, and he said he found some physical evidence, what he thought was, you know, finger and handprints on a trailer located on the family property. Now, Brumfield says that there's no doubt in my mind this was a real encounter. I know the area, and if I were a Sasquatch, this is where I would live. Now, regarding the wish to kill something, I explained that we have never received a report where Bigfoot hurt anybody. Now, they say they've never received one. So, hopefully, this old boy don't decide to bust one off on Big Feets. You know, just like, go ahead and get it. But look, I understand he's hurting pets and all that stuff, but is he? You know, who knows?
And I also find a little odd that he knows where the thing lives. This happens all the time. If you know, go down there with a camera. Take some photos. Get a scientist. Call somebody. Go call somebody from the University of Alabama or something and go, look, I've got one of these things here. Will you come with me with a film crew so that there's multiple witnesses? Then we all go down there. I'll take you to its lair. Wouldn't that be proof? But that never happened.
We'll
right?
dart it. We'll tranquilize it.
Yeah, there you go. And we'll remove it. Call Critter Getters or whatever that service is around here where they get possums and stuff from rooting into people's trash cans.
Critter Getters. Yeah.
Right?
That's what I
That's why I'm like, man, this sounds like bull.
You know why it sounds like that? Because it probably is.
You
but
smell that?
Here's the thing. 20 minutes, you couldn't just like real stealthily ninja crawl over there to get the phone? Because I would have tried, scared it off or not. I would have tried, because here's what it is. He's already stated earlier that he doesn't want it around.
Yeah.
So if you scare it off, who cares? You scare it off.
Right.
There's no reason to kill it, though. I mean, come on. Mm. Go down there and take pictures of it. Like you said, I'll tell you what, have another barbecue, leave some more beer and brats out, and then get your camera ready because he's coming back on the porch.
Yeah, it'd be like Harry and the Hendersons. Maybe
exactly.
Become a buddy of yours.
Exactly.
Live it in your place, you know?
Exactly.
Pretty cool. Well, I know how you have a fear of the ocean.
Oh, great.
So I saw an article recently and I had to bring it up. I go, ooh, Cam's going to like this one. it's an article and it's on Live Science and it's about how a school bus sized giant squid may be living and lurking in the deep of the ocean. Now, you know, of course, these giant squids have always been steeped in mystery. They're elusive and they have eyes, you know, in these stories, these fables, size of basketballs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a monster cephalopod, But they do think that some of these stories might actually have some truth to them. Now, there's a new article that points out that specimens recognizable as giant squid have been found washed up on shore since at least 1639. And these sea monsters, which some people say inspired the legend of the giant kraken, you're familiar with that.
Yes.
But a lot of scientists don't agree that these exist, these large, large, large ones. They said that they're very elusive, but just because they're super elusive, that doesn't mean that they don't exist. And they actually photographed a giant squid for the first time in its natural environment back in 2004. Now, ever since giant squids were discovered, there's been considerable speculation as to how large they can actually get. Now, in previous analysis of more than 130 specimens, scientists said that they don't think any of them should exceed 42 feet or 13 meters in length. Suggesting that giant squids could grow larger than that, they say, is a disservice to science. Now, there's a man named Charles Paxton, and he's a fisheries ecologist and statistician at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. And he points out that there may be hundreds and even thousands of giant squid living in the ocean right now, so that there's plenty of chances for giant squid to grow larger than previously suggested. He thinks, through his studies, that these giant squid could easily reach 65 feet or even 20 meters in total length. Now, he's been studying and measuring various specimens of giant squid, which included 164 measures of the mantle, which is also the body of it, the mantle length, and the length of the tentacles, as well as the length and size of these beaks or mouths. And they say that the size of a beak on a giant squid actually corresponds with the length of the thing. And by doing this and expounding upon it, he thinks that they can easily grow up to 65 feet long. He said he's heard stories of people claiming that they've seen them over 100 feet long, you know, these sea captains and stuff. He's not sure about that, but he does think that 65 feet is reasonable. Now, of course, there's always going to be a group of scientists that don't like his work and come out the opposite. They say that squid parts, when they find them washed up on the shore, say, or where they capture them, and that they stretch over time, leading to overestimates of the animal's actual size. And also another study reported in 2015 in the Journal of Peer J, they suggest that it's human nature to exaggerate the sizes of ocean giants. They found that people overestimate measurements of whales, sharks, squid, and of course, the catching of fish. Everybody heard of good fish oil. That's exactly right. Now, Paxton's going to go in and he's going to publish his findings in May 17th. Of this year in the Journal of Zoology, so I'll have to go over there and check that out. But how terrifying is that? And I kind of agree with them. Just because the ones we found have only been 42 feet long, how can you definitively say that they can't grow larger than that?
You can't.
Right?
You can't.
They live in an area that's, you know, no one goes down to the depths that they're at. Who knows how big they could be? I mean, everybody, it'll be like a state record for, say, let's say largemouth bass, whatever it is, the, you know, 18 pounds, and then, you know, say some time goes by and somebody catches a 20-pound. Okay, now that's the new standard. And then a couple of years later, I think the biggest one ever caught, I think, is like 24 pounds. I'm not sure. I'd have to look this stuff up. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just because you've found one and studied it, to suggest that they cannot get any bigger than that, I think is foolish. So I have to agree with him.
Yeah.
How big could these things get? How terrifying is that? And also these stories we talked about in the past where the Kraken, you know, these old ships. I'm thinking of like the ones Columbus sailed on, or the Vikings, these old wooden ones. If there was a giant squid that was, you know, 200 foot long,
could bust it into attacking pieces.
I mean, how terrifying would that be?
I always think of like Pirates of the Caribbean when it wraps up on the ship and starts pulling it under. Yeah. You're like, no,
that's pretty cool.
Terrifying.
I knew it would scare you, right?
It doesn't. I don't need a very big one to wrap me up on my kayak and pull me down.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I got you something you'll really enjoy here because I don't know why. It's like clickbait to me every time I see this. I'm a sucker for this. This comes from the Telegraph. This is written by Danielle Demetrio and out of Tokyo. And I get this. Japanese engineers say that their flying cars, you ready for this, will be in the air by the Tokyo Olympics, brud.
When's that? When's the Tokyo Olympics?
2020.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So 4 years from now.
Yeah. There's some young Japanese engineers working on this. Now, they've dubbed this vehicle SkyDrive. Extremely original. And it's fitted with three wheels, a motor, and four rotors. And it's actually, it enables it to take off and land vertically on what they say, you know, all the public roads and any of the, without any need of a runway. Get a load of this. I think we've discussed some of this, but it's only 9.5 feet by 4.5 feet. It claims to be the world's smallest flying car. This is what I like about it, though. Top flight speed, 62 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
traveling
cool.
Up off the ground, 32 feet. So it's they're not it, looking
can't
drastic.
Go, it can't go higher than 32.
It says up to 32 feet above the ground.
Oh, that's nothing.
So, dude, it's only 32 feet above the ground. So we're not talking about, you know, that was always, you know, me and you would always laugh about it off air together. Is like, you know, you can't imagine having people flying 1,000 foot, everybody flying around, racing around. This is crazy enough.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
This is madness enough at 32 feet because you got to be dodging buildings and up and over stuff. But look, 32 feet. Okay. Tsubasa Nakamura is a 31-year-old fella that's working on this, along with 20 engineers. He's heading the team of 20 engineers and designers from across Japan's car industry to build this. It says their goal is to provide, and I like this, a new form of personal transport to help avoid disruption caused by the earthquakes, all that Japan suffers from. Correct. You get all that now. On its website, this is what they posted. Our vision is to initiate a new era in which everyone can fly freely. We are developing the world's smallest car with a VTOL system, which is vertical takeoff and landing.
Right, yeah.
And it can fly anywhere at any time. It enables us to go places where we cannot go now, or, and I get a load of this part, I like this, Kyle, to live on water by releasing us from transportation on roads.
Hmm.
So now you're thinking, you know, maybe there is a way you could have a floating city or something, yeah, and then you could, you know, back and forth to land. Now, this is pretty cool. It says the prototype of the flying car, measuring a fifth of its final size and fitted with adapted drone technology, was just recently tested near Toyota City, and it was hovering about 10 foot off the ground. Now, Mr. Nakamura told Japan Times, we hope to complete it and get it ready for use as soon as possible. Now, he studied mechanical engineering, and he developed race cars. That's what he was into. But he launched the first flying car project in 2014 by using a small prototype. It's a toy car, like a toy motor.
Yeah.
But he crowdfunded this thing and made 2.6 million yen, and he built the first full-scale prototype just last year.
What is it taking so long for them to come up with this?
I'm thinking the whole deal isn't the ability to fly. I think that's the simplest part. It's the safety. Because once you turn it over to the public, if somebody gets hurt, well, then it's your ass.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, right. This is going to cause a nightmare. I mean, can you imagine if there's just people just darting all over the place?
Yeah, that's my thing, and running together. And so you're going to have Google car technology. Then you're going to have, you know, safety landing where it inflates into a big ball. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, but I want it to be so real. I want this to really take off and really take hold because I think it would be interesting. Because I've always loved the idea of the Jetsons as you were kids. You see them. You know, the little car. I love the idea.
So I wonder, would you have to become like a licensed helicopter pilot to own one of these cars?
You know what? I don't know. That's a really good question.
I mean, you'd have to go through some kind of training,
I would assume you wouldn't if it was like a VTOL thing. Because maybe if it's like a Google and it would do it all on itself, maybe you don't have to.
Yeah, maybe not. That is pretty cool. Well, you know, we've talked about on this show from time to time doing an episode on witch trials and witch hunting and
yes,
stuff, but I didn't actually know that it was still going on today. Were you aware that even in 2016, this practice of witch hunting and killing in the name of superstition actually still persists in a few places on the earth, and one of them is Assam, India. Now, of course, like I was talking about, the classical period of witch hunting goes back to the 14th century, and it's not just here in America, but it was all across Europe, Africa, and Asia. Now, in India, witch hunting dates back hundreds of years, and it emanated in the Morigaon district of Assam, which is now infamously known as the Indian capital of black magic. Now, people from far-flung areas would come here to learn witchcraft, and they say even today, witch hunting is being practiced in the state and has become a burning issue, where predominantly, of course, women fall prey to this heinous crime, but they do say in some rare instances, men do too. Now, witch hunting in India involves branding the victims, especially women, as witches, either after an observation is made by a witch doctor. Now, get this, Cam. The victim who is branded as a witch is subjected to numerous forms of torture, beatings, burns, paraded naked through the cities, and sometimes even raped. And in some of their cases, their hair is cut off, and the victim and their children are socially ostracized and even put to death. But there's some shenanigans here. They say that these people that are calling out these witches are these proclaimed witch doctors. When they say, if you look into it deep enough, turns out these witch doctors are kind of doing it so that they can line their pockets, okay? So say there's a piece of land that you want to own, and you're like, man, that'd be a really good place for me to set up a shop. What's the easiest thing to do? I'm a witch doctor. I'm going to start saying the owners of that property. are practicing witchcraft.
Yeah, so then, I can get my hooks into it.
Exactly, and then they get a hold of them. They you know, ostracize them, they torture them, whatever, and they're ridiculed, publicly ridiculed, and they drive them off, and guess what? Now that land's available. Now I can move in and set up shop. They say, according to some reports, and I didn't know it was this much, about 1,000 women have been killed across India in just the last 10 years for practicing witchcraft. Can you believe that? 1,000 people?
No, that's crazy, isn't it?
In this day and age, they say that they've actually had to go in, and the government has launched a project called Prahari in 2001, and this is to curb the practices of witch hunting. Now, under Prahari, regular health camps and stuff are organized, and they're there to dispel these rumors where you can't just say someone's a witch. And they've actually passed a bill, and it's called the Witch Hunting Prohibition and Prevention Protection Bill.
That's a mouthful.
Right? And this is a bill actually there to stop these witch hunts from going on and killing these women. Because apparently, you can call somebody a witch, and if I can get a couple witnesses, like my neighbors and you or somebody, mm-hmm. and we all go, yeah, 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 she's a witch, that's all you need, and you can just go kill them. And nobody really has a problem with you killing them.
Wow.
But they're trying to put an end to this. They're saying, this is medieval. You can't do this. This is 2016. And even the ability to become a witch doctor, they say, is kind of shady. I mean, you know, I guess it's like with all these industries. They just somehow make people believe that they have this special power and that they have the ability to detect who's a witch and who isn't. And I think there was a lot of that going on even over here in the United States back in the day. And it's really terrible because these women, they don't have... It's not like here. I guess they don't have any... You can't go to trial. There's no lawyers or anything. I mean, if...
Nobody speaks for them.
No. If the people say you're a witch and they caught you, you know, performing some kind of spells or doing something, that's it, man. You're at the mercy of the mob, whatever they want to do to you. So hopefully, the passing of this new bill, the Witch Hunting Prohibition, Prevention, and Protection Bill, will actually eliminate the hunting of witches. But, it's an interesting case. I had no idea that this was still going on. Did you?
No, that sounds ridiculous to me. It really does. It sounds like it's almost made up, but because I don't want to believe it's still going on.
Yeah, but apparently this is another place. They also claim that a couple places in Africa actually have people that are they believe in witches, and witch hunting is going on there too. Crazy. This place is crazy. Now, speaking of crazy, we got some crazy and interesting stories that were emailed or called in from our listeners, our fantastic listeners. So let's take a break, and when we get back, we're going to get into it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, Cam, Kyle, what's happening, folks? My name is Ryan. I'm out in Fresno, California. Big fan. I was 16 in Baja, California. My family and another family or friends of ours had rented a timeshare on the coast in Rosarito. And we were there for about a week. And people that owned the place had, you know, left their liquor cabinet stocked and gone into town. You know, bought a couple ounces of pot. And I go up onto the roof at night and, you know, look at the stars. And anywho, one night I was up there and, you know, the stars are just incredible. So many of them and, you know, just really mesmerizing. And this night I had, you know, yet to smoke or drink anything. and looking up at the stars. I'm looking to the east, and kind of looking east, southeast. And out of the corner of my left eye, I notice something moving. And I look and I realize that I'm looking at a UFO because it's moving in an arc like a satellite might, like in an orbit. And as it's moving, it's blotting out stars that it's passing in front of. It was perhaps my vision the size of a dime, and it was looked exactly as a Metatron cube might, or you know, a 20-sided dice with trip. I could only see the vertices of the angles. And the thing was rotating on its vertical axis, and the vertices of this object were this shifting color. So if you've read Lovecraft's The Color Out of Space, it was that color, like a silvery, shining display of colors outside the normal spectrum. And I'm sitting there stunned, and it gets to where I was originally looking, and it stops. There's blackness. It's darker than the sky around it. It begins to seep out of it, like tendrils. And it gets to about the size of a playing card in my vision, and it's blotted out all the stars that are surrounding it. I feel like a deer in the headlights, like a predator is looking at me, like cold, icy fear of death in the pit of my stomach. Like, I'm looking at it, and it is looking back at me. And just as suddenly as the darkness had, like, come out of the thing, the tendril went back into it, and then the points of light shot off in different directions and became stars or left my vision. And as the blackness went back into itself, I sort of felt myself fall back into my physical body. And, I was pretty shaken up.
What a crazy sighting, right?
You know what that made me think of the minute he's discussing all that?
What?
You remember on the part in the very beginning of the movie Hellboy, when they find the Nazis and they've got all the stuff set up and it starts tearing like a hole in space time.
Yes.
And there's those creatures, and then there's like, it pulls that spotlight up into it. And that's what it made me start thinking of, is that other dimension like that.
Yeah, you're right. Man, I never thought of
that. You know what I mean? Like, because there's like tentacles or something on that thing. And I don't know. I just started thinking of all that. I'm like, he's being sucked into the whole other dimension. You can't get out.
Yeah, and you know, and this doesn't scream like something to me that's man-made. I mean, this does seem otherworldly in his description. That is bizarre, but we really enjoyed that. Thank you so much. Well, I got another story here about a UFO that was sent to us by somebody named Whitley. And it's pretty cool. It starts off by telling us, I'd like to tell you a story about a UFO I saw with four of my friends. It was about 4 years ago. We were in high school. We were chilling at my mom's like we always did. I couldn't tell you exactly what time it was, but I'd say it was probably around 11. We all went outside to smoke. And before I go any further, none of us were drinking or using drugs. We were only sophomores. We weren't even old enough to drink yet. But anyways, we went outside to smoke a cigarette. And it was a clear and beautiful night. So, as people often do, we were looking at the stars, and that's when we noticed a plane. It had its blinking lights on, but it wasn't the plane that was so interesting. It was what was next to the plane that caught our attention. It was a single, steady light that was following it. And we all said, it must be a jet following it, because I live in Maine near Bangor, where all the military planes come out all the time. I didn't believe in aliens or UFOs. But anyways, we were watching it, and I noticed another light speeding towards the plane. It reached the plane and went on the other side of the airplane, like there was one on each side of the wings now. Here is where it got weird. The light, or lights, began to fly around the plane like circles. They were just going circles around it. We all just looked at it and followed it with our eyes. The lights then began to zig and zag and do circles. It was just doing things planes can't do. This continued all the way across the sky until I said, man, screw you aliens. I'm not going to believe in this, but I swear on my mother's grave that, like, it's right when I thought this, one of those lights stopped. and I can remember clearer even today. It was about to leave our sights, and it stopped and started coming towards us really fast. I said I can remember it clearer today than I could then. It was about the size of a pen, the roundness of a pen, if you were to hold it out at a full arm's extension. That's how big it was. We just sat there, me and my friends, and we stared at it what felt like hours, but honestly, it was probably only like 10 minutes. Then the light just simply zoomed off until it was gone. So that's a pretty cool sighting, right?
What would you rather have? Would you rather have a UFO sighting? And we're not talking about anything. We're talking about like something disturbing. I'm not talking, you know, of course, I guess Bigfoot in a way could be disturbing, but we're talking about, let's say, like a shadow people or a fae or a UFO. Which one, if you had, or a time slip, which one, if you had to pick, or even an alternate creepy universe, what would, if you had to pick one that you were say, okay, I think I'm all right with that, which one would it be?
That's a good question. I think I would probably choose fae folk.
It's funny because I would say the same thing.
Yeah. For some reason, like shadow people and demons and djinn and
I don't want a part of that. Extraterrestrials.
Yeah, those things terrify me.
Yeah, I don't need
any of that. Fae folk doesn't seem terrifying to me. Of course, well, I wouldn't eat any of the food or drink any of the wine they offered. But I think I'd be okay having one of those. Now, a time slip would be kind of cool, but it also could be terrifying. So, I don't know. For whatever reason, the fae folk seem like it would be a neat encounter. Like, you know, friendly.
You mean to tell you why I think it would be?
Yeah, sure.
Because I think there's closure to it. I think there's a closure to when you see that, you go, okay, that's a fae folk. When you experience something in the sky, some UFO under that unidentified, that you're not sure what it is, there's no closure. You can't wrap your head around it. Was it man-made? Was it extraterrestrial? Was it interdimensional? Was it just simply a misidentification? There's no closure. And I think that's what would haunt me the most, would be to see something that I could not put a closure to. Whereas if it was a fae folk, you would be like, I saw a fae.
Yeah, you're right.
I saw a gnome. I saw, you know, but if it's something along those, like even a shadow being, you're like, well, was I half awake? You know, was it merely a dream? Or did I really see this thing? Is this thing really here? You mean there's no closure.
Right? Pretty cool.
And the reason I ask you that, Philly, is because we've got a story here that come from Mr. Vang. He sent this in. And he was listening to the Shadow People episode, and he said he had two shadow person experiences of his own a few years back. The first, when he was 19, said he was still attending community college. He said, I live in North Carolina, and I'm a farmer and a son of two humble and hardworking parents. We'd just gotten back to the house after a long day of work in the farm, and after a shower, I went right to bed. He says, now, typically, I would turn on the TV or leave some music playing while I sleep, but this night, I was just too tired. And my phone battery was low, but I didn't care to charge it, so it died. Well, I slept in peaceful quiet in my darkened room, with nothing to use as light except for the light shining through my window from the pole light outside. I had slept for a while and had woken some time later. I was awake, but I didn't open my eyes. That moment, dread and fear flooded my body. I didn't know what was happening. I felt an impending doom and that something was in the room watching me, right at the foot of my bed. And at the time, when I woke up, there was a vibration noise, as if it was right in my ear. It was like the vibrating noise from that smartphone, but continuous and right in my ear. Well, I foolishly decided that I would turn around and look over my left shoulder, because I was sleeping on my stomach at the time, and look at what was in my room watching me. I looked at it for roughly a few seconds, and I saw a shadow at the foot of my bed. It was about 5 feet tall from the floor to the top of its head. It was so dark, no corner of my room could match it. It was distorted and sort of see-through around the edges, but darker as you got more towards the center. I had to excuse myself. But this language is what he writes. But he says, I don't have time for this. I have to go back to sleep. And he said, I actually fell asleep fairly quickly. He said, I was curious at what it was, so I did some research, and sure enough, it turned out to be a shadow person. He said, but I had my second experience when I was at UNCC, except this time it was during the day. And when I looked up at it, it pushed my head back into the pillow. And I told myself the same thing and fell back asleep. said, I did more research and found that these shadow people experiences correlate with UFO abductions, and the vibrating ringing noise was their spaceship. He said, but I don't know what to believe. So I'm kind of along with him. You know, what do you believe with that whole thing? This experience is he's had too that he's seen.
Right. Man, I think these shadow being encounters are terrifying.
Well, one actually like pushed, he felt it push him back into the pillow, but he forced him. And it always like as fast as you fall asleep. But if you feel that, are you really in the room? He's talking about it correlates with abductions. Are you really in the room when this goes down? Or are you on a ship? Is that what it is? Is some of these feelings, is they're projecting this on you? Because, you know, like we always talked about these abductions, that they project people or project the grays or project something on you so it doesn't feel as traumatizing.
Right.
Are they trying to project this shadow people stuff on there and it's just not working? It's actually messing you up more than an actual abduction would
right.
be?
Right. They don't think that that's frightening to us, but it is. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. You know, and the pressing down, when you were talking about pressing down the bed, I mean, that kind of sounds like the old hag syndrome.
It does almost.
Right?
Yeah.
Always
holding
into
the pillow.
Holding you down, right?
Yeah.
The succubus or whatever. Man, I don't know. Is it all just a part of sleep paralysis? That's another thing. Are these people really having these encounters? I don't know. Like the ones like this story that you just read where it's bedtime. I don't know. I could possibly entertain that maybe it is some kind of sleep disorder. But there are other sightings where people have that they're not asleep. They're driving in their car or they happen to be out doing something in the woods like fishing. Now check this story out. This was sent to us. They didn't want their name read, but it says, I had one and only encounter when I was a young boy still in grade school. Me and my family and a family friend were out fishing from the bank for crappie on Kentucky Lake. Now, it's in an area known as Sorrow's Camp. Well, the fish weren't biting in the cove we were fishing, so I decided to work my way next to the next place along a wood line along the edge of the bank to the next cove. There was nothing out of the ordinary that I noticed on my walk along the bank. After fishing in the new spot, again with no luck, I decided to make my way back to where my friend was fishing. To shorten my trip and to save time, instead of walking along the bank again, I decided to take a shortcut, cut through the woods. I would only have to cross one holler to be back where my friend was at. As I reached the bottom of the holler, I heard something behind me. As I turned around and looked up the hill behind me, I noticed a human shape beside a tree. I could identify shoulders and a head, but that was it. No legs, body, or arms. The figure was jet black, standing beside a tree with one tree limb in front of it, about chest level. At that point, I turned and I started running. I remember running with my fishing pole in hand and my lure snagging on the leaves as I pulled through the trees. I didn't care. I didn't stop running until I made it back to the car, and I never looked back to see if the figure moved or stood still. Now, I've only told a few people about this, and one said it must have been some type of entity. I don't know what it was, but I knew that I didn't need to be in that place any longer. Now, some people are going to say that he saw a Sasquatch. That's what it was. It was a skunk mm-hmm, ape. It was a Sasquatch. But, you know, I think if he thought it was something like that, he would have said that in the story. He doesn't. He thinks it was some type of entity.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I like the description where he couldn't really see the bottom portion of it, only like just the top part. Kind of reminds me of like an apparition. Was this a ghost? Was this a shadow being? And if so, this was in broad daylight while he was fishing. So to me, that's a totally different type of encounter.
Yes.
Then when someone goes to sleep and they have sleep paralysis, then all of a sudden they start having these feelings of someone else is in the room and they hear a buzzing sound like you were talking about. To me, that's a different scenario.
Yes.
Was this a physical being? Was this a physical creature, much like a Sasquatch? Was it somebody playing a joke? Could he have mistaken somebody in like, I don't know, a black cloak or a kid screwing around and was dressed up as a ninja? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
As he mentioned, he was there with his friends and family members. You know, maybe he had a cousin that was 5 years older, and he's like, you know what, when they go down there to go fishing, I'm going to dress up in this ninja outfit. I'm going to see if I can mess with them. You know, these things aren't beyond the possibility of happening.
True.
So, I mean,
true.
I don't know. There's a lot of holes, of course, that can be poked at any story, but I do enjoy these. What do you think about that?
I don't know, because it's one of those, I guess you feel like, at least I always do, when you feel like these dark entities, they ought to be tied to something, if that's what it is. I always feel like they ought to be tied to an area, if it's like a battlefield, you know, like we talked about Gettysburg that time, or if it's tied to a house, or if it's tied to something like that. I'm like, well, what could it possibly be? Because I guess I just don't want to believe that they could just be free roaming. Like they're just out there.
I hope not. You know what I mean?
Messing with people and scaring. So maybe there was something dark and sinister tied to that area. This fella had happened. He just doesn't know it yet. Maybe he ought to go back and look. Or if he can't find anything, well, then maybe there's a missing person that's buried there. You know, maybe there is something going on that's evil there. We did the story on the river of something that had happened down there. So maybe there is some darkness that's just left trapped in that area.
Yeah, you're right. Well, there was a story actually that someone called in. Eric from New Mexico called in with this pretty interesting story about a coworker of his back in the day that had an odd sighting one night when they were working. Listen to this.
What up, Mr. Cam and Mr. Philly? It's your boy Eric from New Mexico. I had an interesting story for you guys. I was working at the Walmart distribution center here in New Mexico, and I had a friend. His name was Noe, N-O-E. He was just some Mexican dude that we were just buddies. And he came up to me one day and he told me, he's like, hey man, do you ever see anyone up in the racks while we're picking? And I'm like, no. I was like, why would there be someone up there? And I was like, are you okay? Are you getting enough, you know, enough sleep? Are you on any medication? Or, you know, what's going on, man? Like, what are you seeing? And he explained it to me as if, this being was tall, always wore a tuxedo, and had no face. And I just freaked out because I had no clue about Slenderman, Hat Man. I had no clue about all these things. I've always been a pretty big skeptic, especially at the time I was dabbling in Christianity. So this was back in 2007 or 8. So none of this probably had, I had never even heard of any of this stuff. I was only 18 years old, didn't know no better. So I just thought it was a pretty interesting story of what this guy was seeing. I never saw it. No one else had never seen it. To me, it seemed like he didn't even tell anyone else. Just, you know, me and him were buddies. But, yeah, there you go, guys. That's my story, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
So that's pretty peculiar, right? I mean, it sounds eerily similar to the Slender Man stories, and if this is true, and this did take place in 2007, well, that, folks, was before the myth of Slender Man was even created on the internet. So,
yes,
you know, once again, we talk about this on so many episodes, there always seems to be some kind of back history to these odd sightings. So, did this, I don't know, man. What was the guy seeing? Something moving around up in the racks? He called it the rafters of this big, you know, distribution warehouse.
Wearing a tuxedo. Wearing a tuxedo with no face.
Yeah. It's odd, right?
That would make me leap from something up there.
Yeah, right.
Have you seen the guy? But he never, you know, he didn't really go into, I don't really want to know anymore. I don't need to know any more details. I'm good. Like, no, I haven't seen him, and I don't want to see the guy.
That's me. I don't want to have encounters like this. I don't know. That's bizarre. I love the show because I love to hear these stories that people are experiencing or allegedly experiencing. What is that? Why would this guy, no way, just a coworker, a guy from Mexico, you know, just trying to make a living, why would he pull this guy he works alongside one day and just create that out of nothing? I mean, what would be the point?
If neither one of them had ever, you know, it's not something you'd ever talk about. This just pops up. You're like, come on, man. It don't just pop up. You don't just come up on a guy you worked with and throw that at him, because the first thing you're going to get is probably a lot of harassment, a lot of, you know, cutting up and poking fun. I know that where I work would be the same way. If you pulled somebody aside and said something like that, the guys would more than likely give you a hard time about it. You know what I mean? It'd be like, nah, come on. Whereas this guy's like, hey, let me ask you something. He probably wanted to know if he was going crazy.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, am I the only guy seeing this? Do I see this thing lingering up there?
Right. I have to agree. Well, moving on, another story that has to do a lot with not just Slender Man or these shadow beings, but another interesting topic that people like discussed on this show is, of course, black-eyed kids. Now, a fellow named Brad from Manchester, United Kingdom, he emailed us and he told this interesting story that his grandfather told him. And he's not sure that these were actually black-eyed kids, but the story does sound eerily similar. Now, check this out. He says, this is a story that my granddad told me about just this last Christmas, and it was something that happened to him, and I was totally spooked out. Now, I've known my grandfather all of my life, and I trust him more than most. He would never glamour up a story to make it sound better or anything like that. So when he told me this, I believe it all happened exactly how he said it did. I never took him as a man that had strong beliefs on anything paranormal, and he was not religious like my grandmother. So when he told me this, I did take notice because he was so normally quiet. It happened in the late 1960s. He had moved down to Manchester from Glasgow, where he met my grandmother, and he got a job as a bus driver. One night, he was doing his late shift, which led into the early morning hours, driving a double-decker bus. It was just him driving, and also another man who was the conductor that he worked with. It was the early hours of the morning, and the bus route he was doing was from Manchester City Center straight to Rochdale Town Center, about 8 or 9 miles. As he was driving this route, he stopped at a bus stop just outside of Manchester Center and picked up two young kids who he said were around 10. He also said it was odd because kids this age shouldn't be out at this time. He described them as being dressed as queer. Anyway, he let them on, they paid, and went upstairs to the top deck. These two kids were the only two people he picked up on the route from Manchester to Rochdale. Now, my granddad arrived at the last stop in Rochdale and waited for these kids to get off. He waited and waited and waited and nothing. So, the conductor went upstairs to go get them, but they were gone. There was nobody up there. They had checked everywhere, under the seats, and there was no way they could have left. They would have to have had walked past my granddad or the conductor to leave out of the bus door. There were no broken windows, and you couldn't even open these windows enough to jump out. They only opened around 5 centimeters at the top, just to allow air in, but that's it. My granddad was freaked, but the conductor seemed totally freaked out. He refused to stay on the bus and finished the route back to Manchester bus station with my grandfather. The weirdest thing was, when they came to count the money from the bus that day, the money that these two kids paid with wasn't even there. It didn't add up. It was as if they were never there. So what do you think of that? Were these like black-eyed kids, or was this like ghosts, or... oh, was it some sort of time slip? I mean, him and the conductor, him, his grandfather and the conductor. These kids get on. It's late, 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. What the heck are 10-year-olds doing riding a bus? Well, who knows? I'm not their parents. You pick them up. They pay to get on. They go upstairs to the top of the double-decker bus. And when they get to the last bus stop, they stop, you know, go get the kids. They go up there.
They're not there.
And the money's not there either. That's a weird one.
Yeah. We talk about misidentification. How do you misidentify? Look, you understand it with creatures that you don't know, but how do you misidentify an interaction with another human being?
Yeah, regardless of the kid's age. What it, doesn't matter if they're 30.
It doesn't matter anything. It doesn't matter, you know, age, height, weight, color, belief. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. It's another human being. You don't misidentify an interaction with another human being. So if you know you had it, then that means they were there.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It feels very, it's almost like an alternate realm.
It seems like ghosts to me, but I don't know.
Well, it could be. Yeah, I guess it could be that, but it always, I don't know. I've got you one here that you're going to enjoy. This comes from Jonathan out of Scotland that sent us this. Big fan of the show. I've been listening to it for a few months, and he sent this in, and it's very interesting because he talks about his grandmother and his father and his brother could actually see little people. And he talks about their Gaelic name. Is it Fiershi for the peaceful people? Goes into it. But he says that they seem to have seen his grandmother and his brother, both of the same type of a small person dressed in green like a leprechaun.
So, but his father had a very sinister tale. And I want you to listen to this. Is that it was in the late 60s. He'd been having a few pints on a Saturday night with a mate. The pubs closed early as it was the Sabbath the next day. So they set off for home over a large hill that overlooks the town of Stornoway. As it was a beautiful evening, they decided to stop for a smoke and take in the view. It says, no sooner had they done this than hordes of small men, about 4 or 5 feet tall, gathered around them. Apart from the sheer number of them and their small size, my dad said, that they looked like typical elderly men dressed like local crofters. However, my dad noticed that he could no longer hear anything his friend was saying to him and could only hear the small men addressing him in his native Gaelic tongue. They continually told him that his friend was a liar and was nothing but trouble, and that he should get rid of him. My dad said the situation seemed both real and unreal at the same time. And then all of a sudden, they all just left, and my dad and his friend were on their own again. His friend began to get visibly upset and was frantically telling my father that they were telling him that my dad was a useless, no good liar, and that they must have been demonic, a mindset that my dad shared. To the day he died last year, he never changed his story and insisted in its 100% accuracy. It says, my brother seems to have inherited my dad's ability to perceive these things, as when he saw his fairy, I was with him and saw nothing in broad daylight, although it must have said both him and my dad saw their little friends within 1,000 meters of each other's locations, but separated by 40 years.
Wow, that's bizarre.
Now, how wild is that? 4 or 5 foot tall guys, hordes of them, telling both of them that they were both... It's like they're trying to turn you on one another. Now, is that stuff always around you? Or did they just appear? You know, what is that? Because apparently his father saw him, and so did the guy his father was with.
Yeah. And then years later, his brother has the ability too,
to
right?
see him. Yes, can see him. And they saw him within, we were 40 years apart, and saw some little fae folk.
Man. See, that's the kind of encounter I would like to have.
I would be okay with it, but I like the smaller fae folk. I don't need like some 5-footers I'm going to have to fight. I don't need that to come around.
You like
around.
The little sprites.
I need someone like an 18-incher. I need, like, yeah, or even that. Yeah, yeah, something small like that. But how terrifying would that be to just be surrounded in the middle of the evening? You've been drinking a little bit, and then here they come. You're like, whoa, 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 buddy. Easy now.
Right.
Don't run up on me like that. You're freaking me out.
Yeah, right. Sounds like almost like the Puckwudgie story where they're
yes.
trying to lure you in.
Yes.
Tricksters, right?
Yes.
These are trying to turn these guys on each other.
It sounds that way.
Telling you you're no good, you're garbage.
It sounds that way. Well, you know, when you brought up the time slip, and we were, and this is, I wanted to come back around to this now, is what you were talking about, you know, was it an altered dimension, what they just saw, the story that you told. This comes from Harold, and he writes this in about a time slip. He said he never really thought anything of it, never seemed like a big deal, till he listened to some older Elite episodes where we were talking about time slips. He said, this happened when I was pretty young. He said, probably 8 or so. I don't remember exactly when. I just remember it was at the house we lived in at the time in Virginia. The way the house was set up, I shared a room with my brother, and across the hall was the bathroom, and at the end of the hall was my sister's room. I was in the living room at the time, and I had a clear view all the way down the hallway. It was a normal day, and I was just sitting in the living room, and I had looked down the hall for no particular reason, and I saw my mom walking down the hallway with a stack of folded laundry. I watched her walk down the hall into my sister's room. Well, I hadn't seen her recently because I'd been watching TV, so I wanted to talk to her, so I jumped up and followed into my sister's room. Says when I got in there, the room was empty. Says I was confused by this. I looked around the room very carefully. I looked in the closet. Now, this was a tiny room, and the closet had no space for a person to even be in, really. Says not only was my mother not in the room, there was no sign of the laundry I had seen her carrying. So if it wasn't as if she'd just, you know, walked back out or something, as he had followed her into the room. So I was perplexed at this point, so I decided, you know what, I need to go find my mom. So I went all over the house, and I eventually found her. He says, it's been a while, so I don't recall exactly what room she was in, but I know it isn't any of the nearby rooms. They must have been on the other side of the house or even upstairs. He says, so when I found her, I asked her. And I told her that I had seen her carrying some laundry. And then she disappeared. And I said, my mother hadn't even been doing laundry, and confirmed that she hadn't even walked down the hallway or gone into my sister's room. I said, so Her and I went to my sister's room. We walked in and she clearly said with authority, "Get out of my house." So the mother went in, basically demanded something of whatever this boy may have seen. He said, "I went about my day and had kind of forgotten about the event, but it seemed so strange to me." And he goes on, you know, you have to admit, he said, "I don't know, there's some crazy things that you don't really know what happened." You know, and he wraps it up, you know, he said he's not real superstitious or religious, but he's not really sure what it was. Made him think of a time slip. Makes me think of an alternate dimension. Was his mother in one of these parallel dimensions? In the parallel dimension, was she walking down the hall taking in some laundry, and it was a bleed over effect of what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like the TV show Fringe, right?
Yes, exactly.
Where there are these multiple parallel universes that are just very close together, and every once in a while, you somehow bleed over. I don't know, man. I find, space and time and all these things. These time slips, deja vu, they're very, very intriguing to me. And I think there's far more that we don't understand that we'd like to pretend that we do. So finally, Chris from Columbus called in and he gave us this experience that he had. And I don't know, is this deja vu or is this like ESP, extrasensory perception, somehow able to predict the future? Or did he somehow have a glimpse over, like we were just talking about, into a parallel dimension that somehow gave him insight to something only moments away, and then he kind of went backed up, like hitting that 15-second backup thing on your DVR remote. I don't know, but very interesting. Give it a listen.
Hey, great show, guys. It's Chris in Columbus, Ohio. Just listened to the segment on deja vu. I don't know if that's correct or not. I really think that there's something else involved. Back whenever I was in high school, some 30 years ago, I was in art class, and I started to have a deja vu. As I was going to wash my paint palette in the sink. And I very quickly tried to remember what happened next in the deja vu. And I remembered, like remembering the future, that a girl across from me was going to ask me if I would wash her paint palette as well. And so I reached across the sink very quickly and I said yes before she asked me. And she said, "Would you..." And then she looked at me like she'd seen a ghost, and she turned and walked away, and I have thought that deja vu was a glimpse into the future ever since. Thanks, guys. Bye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Dude, thank you so much, Chris from Columbus. That was awesome. You know what, Philly, he may be right. Maybe it is a little glance into the future.
I don't know, but I find those stories fascinating, right?
Why is it the time slip stories, too? Faye and time slip. I think that might be my two favorite things, period.
I think because as a human being, we're just fascinated with time anyways. I mean, like, you never know when you're going to die. People are fascinated with, like, how much time do I have? Everybody's like, you ever been really concentrating on something? And you're like, holy crap, it's been 3 hours. It felt like I was doing something for 10 minutes.
Right.
Time is an interesting thing, right? Or if you're really bored or having to do something you hate, it seems like time barely moves at all. You know, and... You always talk about the older you get, it seems time flies faster. Mm-hmm. Well, it's true. It's because you have a longer scale to judge from. When you're only 5 years old, you don't have as much time. You know, you don't have such a grasp on time.
Yeah, that's true.
But I love those stories. Thank you so much for everybody sending those in. There was hundreds more. that we didn't reveal yet, and we will at some point, maybe. They just come in so much that we just kind of have to sift through.
Keep sending them, folks.
Absolutely.
Keep sending them.
If you'd like to share the stories with us, Tam, tell them where they can.
You can come to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also send them to them on Facebook. You could even call the show, just like they did, Philly.
817-945-3828.
And if we're going to talk about time, we need to talk about someone's time who is now gone. The time gone is our buddy Brian. Brian and Emma Guarino. Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
The ball and chain has been latched, Brian. She's got you.
Yeah.
We hung out with Brian and Emma when we were in Arkansas. They're great friends of ours. Congratulations. Just married a couple weeks ago. So it was not even that long, just a week ago. So it's awesome. We're so proud of you guys. So everybody, big round of applause.
Yep, yep. Life's over now, son.
Life's over, brother. Time to go to work now. That's it. Just a paycheck. Hey, I got a little feel-good story before we get rolling, bro.
Yeah, sure.
Comes from the Huffington Post. You know, we talked a while back about them actually using a 3D printer to print a shell one time. Well, they've done it again.
Yeah.
Now there's another one that's a tortoise. And it says, shell, yeah. Now it's time to shellebrate. It says a tortoise that lost most of its shell in a forest fire got a 3D printed prosthetic replacement thanks to a team of specialists in Brazil. It's a female tortoise named Fred. I don't understand that at all. I always think of the old, what is it, Rodney Carrington wrote the song now, Fred's Riding Fred, Fred's about the guy named Fred and his horse is named Fred.
I'm not aware of that.
Anyhow, but it said it survived the blaze, but it had two bouts of pneumonia and didn't eat for like 45 days. So this wasn't doing so good, but Dr. Rodrigo Jabello, who found Fred and named him after the horror icon, you know, of course, I guess Freddy Krueger, because the way he was kind of burned up, said, you know what? We got to fix this little turtle up. So what do? That's exactly what they do. They 3D print a four-piece shell.
That's cool.
That's what they put it together. Now, they actually are part of a Sao Paulo-based volunteer team that calls itself Animal Avengers, and it's three veterinarians and a 3D designer and a dental surgeon. And they go out and said it took about 40 photos to build a model and reconstruct the shell. It says we took a healthy animal, took the same 40 photos, reconstructed that animal in 3D, and then put it into the computer. Now, this is a graphic designer, Cesario Moraes, and he's talking to Fantastico, the people that actually covered this story in Brazil. Says just to make a single piece, it took 50 hours of printing, which is much more than we imagined. And that was the dental surgeon talking about it. But basically, they took it, put all four pieces together, assembled it like a puzzle.
Mounted it
on old Fred. The best thing was, is after when they got it all put, before they put it on him, of course, they had a man paint it. And they actually had a dude sit down and hand paint the shell. And it looks awesome. Now, you can go on YouTube, folks. You can pull up the video, Tortoise Gets Hand Painted 3D printed shell, that'll pull up. But it is amazing. So it is cool that people are using, like we talked about, the dog with the deformed front legs. They made it some more front legs so we can run on them. So the 3D printer stuff's coming in handy to help out other animals. I like that. Because other than this, how else would you make a shell? I mean, what would you make one out of? You know, now, because I mean, I can imagine it would take a lot more work than printing it up in a printer. Because they're talking about 50 hours of work. It's not like they were standing over it.
Yeah, right.
You know, you just turn it on and be
CNC
like
CNC machine. Yeah, you come back. You know,
we'll come
two
back.
Days.
We'll come back. You know, next week and we'll pick this piece up or whatnot. I'm assuming it's probably only going to get faster.
Sure.
You know, and everything like that. But still, it's a really interesting idea.
Very, very interesting. I'm glad that they're using science for good.
Yes.
People ask me all the time if I have any books or movies or recommendations. I recently watched a documentary just a couple days ago on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, look for this. It's called The Last Man on the Moon. And it was very interesting about the story of Eugene Cernan, who was actually the last human being to ever step on the moon, and about his two missions and what he loved and what he lost during that whole process. I thought it was very interesting. They have some really outstanding footage that I've never seen before, of the whole thing. And so if you're interested in the moon or astronauts or space travel and stuff, you might check that out. It's very, very interesting. Well, that's all the time we have for the free show, folks. For you elite members, we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. Please be careful out there. Don't work too hard. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all. We'll be right back.
get a good feeling, yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.